It turned out that I swear this is true. It could only happen in America. It could really only happen in Las Vegas. It turned out the judge was not only a judge, he also represented magicians. I swear it's true. Now, the magicians that this judge represented, they weren't kind of like, you know, White Tiger magicians or David Copperfield or anything like that. They were off-the-strip magicians, you know, North Las Vegas magicians, guys that were jumping out of dumpsters going, nah!
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Okay, I'm just going to jump in here. Welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul. That's Simon Cornell.
That is me.
You're on the West Coast. I'm on the East Coast.
I am.
So there's going to be some delays going on here that hopefully our listeners will not know.
It seems pretty good, though. You know, it's like when we're actually sitting down with a decent Wi-Fi connection, the audio delays these days are pretty basic.
It's true. How was your December?
I was just on three ships. That was it. That was my December.
You saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas.
I did.
Day.
I went to something like 9 countries. I lost track. I don't even know how many there were. Which is good because I have absolutely not figured out how to actually get corporate and private work in Magic. I have not solved that problem at all.
Hey, I did like 6 corporate gigs in December. I don't know how I got them. They just happened. There is no like, I know guys that are just amazing at selling and amazing at cold calling. I either have a good agent or you get a last minute referral or someone goes on your website. That's how I get it.
Yeah. I mean, that's also, I mean, you know, we know it's one of the greatest myths about show business, particularly Magic. People assume that you just get gigs. People just call you. No, they don't. That's not how it works. You go out there and sell. You're a full-time sales and marketing person. Your actual Magic skills are a distant secondary thing if you're doing private and corporate.
The show is the vacation most of the time. Well, in corporate sense is not always. Sometimes it's that's something I was going to bring up of just like, performing, you're always getting paid more, but you're performing for much less responsive crowds, and you just have to kind of like plant yourself and go, no, it's fine. They're just quieter, and they'll usually always come up at the end and go, that was great, that was wonderful. So you just never know.
Yeah. Whereas with the ships, particularly the ships I've been doing recently, the gig is the vacation, getting there and back, just the travel. Because, I mean, the recent one was, I was boarding in San Jose, Costa Rica, not San Jose, California. And to get there, because, you know, they optimize the flights for their revenue streams and so on, I had to catch a 1 a.m. flight from LAX to Houston, which is about 3 hours in the air, then wait in Houston for 3 hours, so from about 3 to 6 a.m., no, 4 to 7 a.m. L.A. time, you know, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Houston time, then get on about a 6-hour flight to Costa Rica, then land, stay at a hotel that night in Costa Rica, in the airport hotel. Getting to the airport was its whole thing. And then we had to drive 4 hours the next day to Puerto Limon. So we drove through the mountains of Costa Rica. There were 3 of us, entertainers who had all come from different places and met there. And then we got to the docks in Puerto Limon, which is this tiny-ass, janky port town. And they basically wouldn't let us onto the ship.
Oh, wow.
We were there. The ship was about to depart in about half an hour. We barely made it there in time because traffic through the mountains was crazy for some reason. And then they said, yeah, it's going to be about 90 minutes. They didn't speak English. Luckily, one of us spoke Spanish, this guitarist, Nestor. He was great. Long story short, we figured later on what was probably happening is this old scam where the port comes up with some bullshit reason to delay the ship so it gets fined for departing late.
Oh, wow.
So we don't know this for certain, but we think immigration was deliberately slow rolling us. And we just stood there at the docks outside this kind of, you know, cyclone fence with all our bags and stuff being told, yeah, wait here, give us your passports. And then we had to get driven to another random shed somewhere 5 minutes drive away to go through the quote-unquote face-to-face immigration thing. It was the weirdest, most unsettling experience. And then finally made it onto the ship with everybody watching, because the ship was delayed at that point. And so everyone was leaning over the edge of the ship watching these three hapless guest entertainers sprint for the ship to try and get there once we'd finally made our way through immigration at the dock.
It's wild how that story is just so normal. And it sounds chaotic and like, wow, that's unimaginable. That must never happen. But with like with ships.
Yeah, no, all the time. Yeah.
Just that's getting on the ship is the toughest part. Like you always get to that port and you're like, all right, I don't know who to contact. I don't have anybody's cell phone number. Out? It's insane.
and I mean, normally it's fine. But yeah, that story is very mild in terms of some of the ship people stories I know about.
Sure. Yeah, it's such a weird, ships are such a weird thing, and I don't, it's becoming more and more less stressful, I should say, I just accept that, okay, there's going to be just 2 days of chaos, and then...
Yeah, exactly, once you know to expect it.
And the only thing you're really hoping for is that they don't put you on that night when you arrive and have just done, you know, 24 hours of travel. Yeah. All right, now you have to do two shows.
That's the other thing. I was on that night.
Yep.
I was on 3 hours later.
Oh my God.
Once we finally made it onto the ship. And what was even better was we get on, we're sweaty, we're exhausted, we're dashing in. The ship pulls up anchor immediately and heads off. So we check in, and I've got about an hour and a half until my tech rehearsal. You know, that's okay. I can do that. I'm trained, ready to do it. And then so I'm like, all right, tech rehearsal is an hour and a half. That's enough time to shower, to change, to unpack my stuff and head straight there. And then when we're checking in, the receptionist, who to be fair was very sort of understanding, said so just so you know, I wish we could not do this to you, but it's an unavoidable rule. We have to give you a safety briefing in half an hour. You have to turn up for the safety briefing. So yeah. We went through all that, then safety briefing, then tech rehearsal, then show.
I love how the safety briefings are either like crazy intense or just somebody goes, yeah, you go there, and then you walk away. And it's strange how it's kind of like when you get on the airplane and then the flight attendant is either like super anal about stuff being in by your feet or they just don't care at all.
Oh, yeah. They just go, whatever. Yeah.
That's good. Well, I mean, the strange part is, and you, I don't know, like when I'm like, supposed to perform after just either lots of travel or just being incredibly exhausted, in some weird ways the show goes better because I'm less in my head. I don't know if that's your experience.
Oh yeah, completely agree.
I don't have time to worry about stuff.
Yeah, exactly, you're just in the zone. I find those are some of the best shows, are the ones done under crazy stress situations, because I'm just completely there in the moment.
That happened to me 2 weeks ago at a corporate. I flew in, did the show that night, flew out the next morning, and I was just exhausted from some jet lag or something, and I dropped the egg in the middle of my egg trick, and I just looked down and go, yep, that happened, and just kept moving, because that's all you can do in that moment. And the nice corporate people were like, I don't know if that was part of it, but you just keep the show moving and whatever, it's fine. So I did the Chicago Magic Lounge last weekend to a great crowd, and they're opening their own space in February in Chicago. So if you're a magician or a fan of magic, definitely check it out. They run a great operation there. It's going to be like a speakeasy type thing. It's really cool. But they were in this other place called the Uptown Underground, which is a cool Chicago old school venue, which was a lot of fun. And then last night I did a show for literally all my family and friends in Detroit. I did a sold-out show, and the only reason it's sold out is because my mom bought 10 tickets, my mother-in-law bought 13 tickets, and then a bunch of friends from high school bought tickets. But there is no... I walked out on stage to, like, you know, lots of fun, lots of excitement, and then there was this weird 20-minute period of the realizing you're performing in front of literally everybody you grew up with. And that was a strange, kind of surreal experience. And I kind of just had to rely on a lot of my training in doing ships or corporate stuff of just, like we said earlier, just planting yourself and going, all right, this is how it's going to be. And about 20 minutes in, the audience relaxed, and I think they had a lot of fun, and everybody was really kind and receptive. But it was I've never done anything like that probably since, you know, like a high school talent show where you're performing in front of an audience of everybody you know and like family, friends. Just that was a weird experience, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's great.
Let's see here. I'm sure people are kind of clamoring about your money situation. I did want to bring that up.
where did we leave it last time?
We left it where you thought the transfer was going to go through, I think.
That's right.
Did you get the money?
It did. It did. I have right now I have half the money because I'm doing it in chunks, right? Because there's a daily transaction limit.
Okay.
You can't do the entire thing in one go. But the money, the three of the five chunks I've done it in have come through. I have money. It's coming. It's not all there yet, but I've already got half of it. It feels good.
Okay, so there's a happy ending to the story.
Yeah, we're sort of in the middle of breaking through the finish line tape. It's not all there yet, but it's there's no difficulties anticipated. Three of the five transfers have already gone through. It's looking good.
It's kind of, if you think about it, it's kind of absurd that you can like just send somebody money now through an iMessage or through a Venmo, like no problem. But in order to get it from just a separate country. It's all this red tape and all these.
Yeah.
Which, as it should again, be, I suppose.
China specifically, though. I mean, because the thing that screwed up the whole thing was their obsession with precisely accurate signature matches, and then B, their really weirdly elaborate process for a net banking password reset. those were the two things that caused this, yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, that's good. Godspeed on that. That's congratulations.
Yeah,
it only took 12 months.
man, I was putting the finishing touches to the article while on the last ship.
Oh yeah, this is going to come out and people can read it.
Coming soon to thingsbysimon.com.
That's good. I was doing so well blogging like once a week, and then I just kind of got. It's the reason this podcast went down to once a month. Is I don't feel like I have anything useful to contribute half the time. I feel like I'm just yapping.
Well, that's social media in a nutshell. People who don't have anything useful to contribute but do it anyway.
Yeah, and we were talking about this last episode, but it is funny how, and like right after we talked about this on the episode of, I think both of us in different capacities at one point trying to get more followers and then not caring at all, then trying to get more followers and then not caring. It's always, I've noticed the pattern is when I don't care, I suddenly get followers and I suddenly get more clicks and likes on things I post. And I wonder if that's a Zen thing. I wonder if that's just a metaphor from the universe of you need to not be attached to these things that you're putting out for attention purposes, or if I'm just making that up.
I mean, yeah, and I'm really 95%. I mean, I only have a Twitter and an Instagram and a Snapchat and a YouTube because of Korea. I don't want those things. I gain no enjoyment or pleasure from people liking my stuff or whatever. I don't get off on that. That's just not interesting to me. But it's a, you know, and honestly, I don't even know if it's paying off professionally. It may at some point. That's why I'm still investing in it, because at some point it might pay off in some way.
Sure.
Maybe when a bunch of other projects come together. I'm still working on the big exciting live show that has been coming soon for forever.
Mm-hmm.
Glitches in Reality. That's actually one of the big plans for this year, next year, 2018, whatever day it is to get that happening. And that's something where the social media presence might actually pay off if that actually starts to gain some traction.
Yeah, I mean, I can't be totally against it because I sold out this local comedy club show I just did last night. Because of social media and because of putting up a Facebook event. So it's not...
Oh, that's cool.
It's not bad in every sense. And it does...
Yeah, it's potentially a powerful tool.
Yeah, and it has its useful purposes. But I think just...
it's just so absolutely saturated with bullshit.
It really is.
That's what
is.
Annoys me about it.
If just somebody follows me...
99% of it.
Yeah, totally. And if somebody like... you know, follows me and every photo on their Instagram is just a picture of their face or a picture of them at something. I'm like, that's, it kind of says something about the person in general.
It, Yeah, but you know what's the worst thing is I've played with this a bit on Instagram is when I upload just a generic shitty dumb face selfie, which originally I did almost as a self parody. Mm-hmm. It gets more likes than an actually interesting photo of something that I think is constructive.
Yeah, it's true.
And I went, wow, yeah. that's what the mass market wants. That's what people want to see. They want to see your face.
Yeah, I don't know. It's we've talked about this a fair amount, but it's. I don't know how I feel. One day I'm for it, and the next day I'm like, eh. But it's for what we do. It's necessary in today's day and age, and I use it to. And I'm sure people get sick of, hey, I'm doing this. Hey, I'm doing this. But it's like, all right, well, I need to use it to advertise in some capacity. So.
Mm. Well, I mean, the other thing I always think about is people wouldn't be following you if they weren't interested in hearing what you're doing.
True. They can.
Right? They could just click unfollow and immediately if they don't want to hear
the best
your
thing.
Stuff.
It without. Without a doubt, every single time I get a new follower, I simultaneously lose like three. So I'll gain a couple, and then I'll check because every once in a while I'll look at my profile thing. I'm like, oh, okay, that's great. And then I'll look. I'm like, oh, I'm down three or four followers. Not that I'm obsessive. It sounds like I'm obsessively checking that. I'm not. I'm just. I'll notice anytime somebody new follows me, I'll also lose followers, and I don't know if they're just robots or if they're just like people from high school that are like, yeah, F this guy, which is totally rational. Yeah. I agree with them.
Yeah, it makes sense.
it's so weird. The whole thing is just insane.
Well, I mean, this whole idea of whether you need social media, it depends on what your objectives are because, you know, I don't want to spend my whole career doing ships. This is something that's a great thing for now. I'm very happy about it.
Sure.
It's wonderful, but it's not my long-term plan. If it were, however, I could just ignore social media forever because ship gigs have zero relevance. Like, social media has zero impact on ship bookings.
Yeah.
That's 100% based on your relationship with the agent. You're on ship reviews and, like, how word spreads in the industry.
I have a giant picture of my face that sits there for an hour before my ship show that has my Instagram and Twitter handle, and I have not gotten a single follower out of all the shows I've done on ships. And it's just because it's a different market.
It's demographic thing.
Demographic. Yeah. Maybe in 20 years when millennials have the money to go on ships, that might be a whole different thing. But right now,
well, because we're doing similar lines, aren't we? It's rich old white people.
Essentially, yeah.
They're not heavy social media users. They're lovely. No. They're great, but it's...
They're nice people, yeah.
Yeah.
But they...
Follow you on Instagram.
I don't think they know what Instagram is, which is rightfully so.
Good for them.
But they know about the terrorists.
Should we just rename this podcast Magical, like, Existential Curmudgeons? Is that what we should call this?
I think we're both just... We've both just had a busy 2 months, and like, and I say that as it's someone true. Who had a very slow 2 months before that, and that's just the ebb and flow of this business. And once again, going back to social media, anytime somebody goes, "Wow, according to Facebook, you're really killing it," I'm like, "I am today."
Yeah, it's like define killing it as well. There was a period of a couple of years where everyone was saying that to me, and I was earning no money.
Yeah,
like I was doing lots of gigs and lots of traveling a lot, but it was stressful, non-profitable travel. Someone goes, "Oh my god, you're in these places doing these shows with," and no one knows what killing it actually means. They have no idea. And it's not their fault.
Coming from a place of kindness. It's not a, hey, look at you, you big show off you. But
yeah, but at the same time, what you know, at that time, what I needed was not someone to go, wow, you're killing it. What I needed was someone to go, hang in there, buddy. It'll get better. That's what I actually needed because that's what life was at that point. But no one could see that from the surface, again, of the social media. You know, I wasn't lying. I was just going, I'm in this place doing this show. I didn't happen to mention that I was earning $10 for that show and didn't know how I was going to make my rent that month.
I think my favorite post you did this month, it just popped up. I don't like scroll on feeds that often, but yours popped up of you just like with all your luggage in front of a ship. And I think your title was like obligatory like ship photo or going to work photo or something like that.
Yeah.
It's very accurate.
Yeah, I usually I find it very hard to post on Instagram without without putting some kind of sarcastic irony in the list of hashtags. The superficiality of it all.
If we're keeping with the curmudgeon theme, nothing.
I don't know if that's something we want to lean into.
We shouldn't. But there is. I am always skeptical of people, and I mean, I guess this is judgmental. I'm not trying to make it judgmental, but I am skeptical of people that just put up like positive, inspirational quotes for their photos, and I'm like, where is this? Where's this guy? Is this genuinely trying to help people, or is this is there some other motive behind this? I don't know.
I think they're just jerking off with their happiness or something. I don't know, something like that.
That's the title of this episode: jerking off with their happiness.
I mean most people, let's face it, are primarily motivated by self interest. Sure. You notice people we're campaigning for exactly. But at least we can acknowledge that. You know, most people campaign for causes that benefit them and or people they know and or things they've experienced. And that's fine. That's the nature of the human condition. But most people are doing, I think, making those positive posts are kind of getting off on how positive they think that. You know, it's that whole thing of wanting to see yourself a certain way and gaining pleasure from seeing yourself as that. And so acting out that role so that you get to feel good about it.
Yeah, and I mean...
If that's constructive, then hey, sure, that's okay.
And that goes back to my show last night of, you know, I was actually literally just like cleaning out my parents' closet today because there's like a bunch of old like magic stuff and old stuff from high school theater that's in there that they need me to get rid of, which I thought I did and I never did. And it's weird like going through your old stuff and going through like I found a letter that I had written myself in like 2004. And it's interesting to see like what the goals were and what my kind of take on life was. And yesterday was kind of surreal because it's like, oh, that was the goal. The goal was to be performing full time in a show that I'm proud of. And it was, like I said, simultaneously weird doing it in front of like everybody you knew, but at the same time showing everybody, hey, like I'm still in this. I've been doing this for 13 years and I'm still in this. And that's, I guess it's a weird self-serving thing, but it's if you're somebody who's like had a dream or an idea and you keep doing it and keep working at it, I don't know, I'm losing my train of thought here, but, kind of going back to what you said of the, you know, people are like, well, you're killing it. And you're like, no, I'm just trying to do this, you know?
Yeah. And that comes into this whole, you know, again, the theme of what does it mean to be successful? And that's a very subjective thing that's different for everybody.
Especially in today's day and age where everybody is at 15 minutes of fame.
Mm. Yeah, some people will get that and be happy with it. And that's, yeah. But I think, I mean, if, you know, God forbid we get into life advice because that's so subjective anyway. But, you know, make sure you know what you want out of something. Make sure you know why you're actually doing something, what you hope to get out of it. Because then... You're more likely to get there if you really think about what you want and what's going to get you there as opposed to someone else. You know, for example, a lot of people go, I want 1 million followers. I read this fascinating article that a lot of like YouTube accounts with 1 million subscribers and Instagram accounts with millions of followers are still working at coffee shops to pay their rent. Just because you have that amount of attention doesn't mean it's generating profit necessarily. Some people are, but most aren't.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they don't actually care. To someone, they might be happy with their coffee shop job and their 1 million followers because they just love the attention. And I don't think that's emotionally healthy, but that's not for me to judge. If someone actually just goes, you know what, I really do just like attention. That's all right. Then go get that for you. Just don't hurt other people in the meantime.
Yeah, I guess so. Going back. Go ahead.
Sure, you go. I have a topic.
Go ahead. I just
noticed last night that next week you and I are Magic Castle buddies.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say, hey, shameless promotion. Yeah. Actually, this comes out on the 1st, so all this week if you're in LA.
So it will be. Yeah. So this week.
Are you doing the full week in LA, the color?
Tuesday to Sunday. It's a partially extended one.
Cool.
It's still peak holiday season.
I will be there Tuesday to Sunday too, and I'm the late parlor, so I will not see any of your shows.
But well, it's not even really self promotion because we gain nothing from more people coming to see these shows.
Well, that's the funniest part about,
and no one can come anyway unless they're a castle member.
That's the funny part is you say I'm
the most useless thing to promote.
I'm performing at the Magic Castle. Sorry, I can't get you in.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I'm doing this thing that you probably can't see. Yay, thanks.
Yeah, and I don't. It's
but again, you know, the only reason to post that is bragging rights and attention and
for
blah,
sure.
Blah, blah,
and
blah,
I worked my
professional reputation and everything.
I like this is the one thing I will brag about because I worked my ass off for 4.5 years to try to get booked at the castle. So
yeah.
And I don't take it for granted. And when a week is thrown at me, like I changed a flight. You know, I spent $200 on a flight change just to do this week. Because I'm like, yeah, this is why I came to LA is to do this gig
Hell
and to
yes.
do gigs like this. And it, you're not
yeah.
for these ones. You're not. You do the corporate ones for the money. For these, you do for
the joy.
For the joy, yeah.
For the joy.
And that goes back to what you were saying of know why you want to do something.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing this professionally 13 years or so, and I've only in the past couple of years been trying to figure that out. Because it's
yeah.
something that it's like a weight on your shoulders if you don't comprehend that.
Yeah, well, I mean, most people just function basically on habit and inertia. Oh, this is what I do, so I'll keep doing this. Or this is what the people around me are doing, so I'll try and do that too. You know,
yeah,
most people don't sort of step back and think, hang on, what am I really trying to do?
And that doesn't mean what we do is easier mentally, easier.
No.
In many cases, there's much more anxiety and annoying.
It's torturous, yeah. A lot of the time.
Yeah, so...
It's extreme contrast. Like, the highs are very high, but the lows are very low. It has these amazing moments to it that are, you know, thankfully, blessedly, very frequent. But in between those moments of awesomeness, it's incredibly exhausting and anxiety-inducing and challenging and difficult and arduous and all those things.
And, once again, going back to my show last night of being around friends who I used to like perform with in theater, and you know we would, yeah, that was our life at the time. And then you see them in jobs now, and some of them are happy, and some of them aren't. And that's, and I think what worries me a little bit is they see me in that capacity where everybody's happy and they enjoy the show and you know they're impressed or whatever, but I worry that they don't see the struggle, and I worry that they only see the end result, and I hope they're not like comparing a job that they don't like to something just because I've been doing something I'm passionate about, you know?
Yeah. And I can tell you that's definitely all they're seeing. That's, that's just how people see things. And that's why like on social media, even the things that are honest on social media are still dishonest because they can't show everything. Even if you try and honestly represent your life and what you're doing, you can't explain all of it. There's not enough space to paint the whole picture. So basically never believe literally anything you see on social media, because even if it's true, it's not the whole truth, and there's always so much more than that beyond the surface.
And there's I don't know, just trying to get off this topic but going back into it,
I know, it's clearly a thing that's on our minds.
It's just like this weird double-edged sword, because you know, you try to get away from it, and then you realize how much you just need it and how much it's just been ingrained in your life. And once again, just like going through my old closet and going through old stuff, like VHS tapes and photos and CDs, it's wild how much of that you don't need anymore because our whole life is digitized now. And like I threw out a crap ton of CDs today in cases, because I'm like, I don't need this anymore. This is a physical limitation of a decade ago.
Yeah.
And it's wild to see how much, you know, our whole culture has just changed.
Yeah, and I'm personally loving it. Like, I love not having shelves of books anymore. I know some people hate that, and okay, good for you, that's fine. I'm happy that I'm not cursed with the need to want sheets of dead tree material with ink on them.
See,
it's I'm a voracious reader. I just devour novels, particularly while traveling. And now I can have gazillions of them just on a Kindle. Oh, that's amazing. I love it. Just my life is less cluttered.
I love the feel of real books. And like I'm fine getting rid of DVDs and I'm fine getting rid of CDs. I love the real feel of real books. But if you travel, you need the Kindle, because especially in our case, we're so limited to weight and stuff we're bringing, that just little additions to your life like that makes all the difference.
Mm. Yeah, but you know what? I also, look, I do love physical books. I love the feel of them. I love the look of them. But you know what I love even more? Cubic meters of additional extra space in my living
and
area.
And we're both...
I love that all. I love that more.
But the thing is, we're books. Coming at this from a two people that live in the city in tiny apartments. both very nice apartments, and we're doing fine. But we just live in smaller spaces. So I think that's where a lot of our minimalism, at least for me, that's where it comes from, is I don't have space for this stuff and it needs to go away. But if you live in a house, you can just put it in your basement or put it in a storage facility.
Yeah. Yeah, but even then that accumulates. You know, when I lived back in Australia, I had a lot more space, but it fills up over time. Anything. I just love empty space and I don't have enough of it.
But
in
here's
my life,
the thing.
No,
we are two
where I live.
Biased magicians who purposely don't do big illusions because they take up too much space.
Man. Oh, that's true. Did we talk about the Kevin James thing?
No.
His lecture and the pack small plays big concept?
I don't think we ever recorded this part, but I remember talking. It sounds familiar.
So basically, this happened way back. Kevin James, incredibly talented creator, performer, performs with the Illusionists, yada yada, great guy, you know, real innovator in so many ways. I mean, half the traditional cruise ship magicians basically do the three Kevin James tricks.
Sure.
Right? The floating rose, the Bolarama, and everything. You know, he's a great guy.
He has contributed to more cruise ship magicians than anybody else.
Yeah, more cruise ship magicians have Kevin James to thank for their careers.
Yeah.
And that was something Armstrong said. One of his friends, a cruise director, I can't remember the name, said that they could save magicians their travel costs by just having a locker on the ship labeled magician that has a Bolarama, a floating rose, just all the Kevin James stuff, a cardiographic, that's Martin Lewis. But yeah. And thankfully, we can do some different stuff now. And so anyway, Kevin James did a lecture, and for non-magicians, that's sort of a magician, you pay admittance and they sort of talk about some of their tricks and skills and shit, and it's sort of like basically a workshop, educational thing for magicians. It's how a lot of the magic knowledge is shared, you know, throughout the generations and so on. And in it, there's this obsession magicians have with this idea of pack small, plays big. You can fit things in your carry-on, travel light, but still play to a big audience, because that pays more money, generally, the bigger audience you can reach. And someone asked him about this because, you know, Kevin James has an insane amount of stuff he has to travel with. He has to ship everything and he has such huge props and various other logistical constraints to his show. And he said he feels the opposite. He says he thinks you should do something that's so spectacular and if it's arduous to carry and transport, that actually makes it more unique because it means everyone else is less likely to go to the same lengths to do something similar or that can compete with it. Right, so he actually sees that as an asset. It makes your career, makes it stand out in your career. And when he said that in this lecture, four of my friends turned around just to raise an eyebrow at me because just the other day I'd been talking about how excited I was I'd finally got a show down into carry-on size and so on. And so it was this conflict of opinion. And to this day, I completely see Kevin's point and I think he's got it right. But if I had to carry around that much stuff as he did, I would rather go back to a business analyst desk job. Like, I would be so unhappy with my life because I hate carrying lots of stuff around. I hate it enough that I would... It's like with books. Like, I like the book, but I prefer the empty space.
Yeah.
I like doing magic, but I hate carrying around lots of stuff even more than I like this career. So I would rather go to a different job than have to deal with that.
Yeah, and that just kind of depends.
Because
people
are different. We're all... Yeah.
What you want.
What is success to you? What do you like? What do you not like? What makes you happy? What makes you sad? And trying to optimize for all those variables.
Yeah, but I mean, it's funny, like how even we, if we go work at the Comedy Magic Club, you know, we're the weirdos because we have stuff to set up. I bring in one suitcase and it's taking up the whole hallway.
And everyone looks at you weirdly. Why have you got stuff? What are you, a prop comic?
Yeah,
that's hilarious to me, by the way, this idea that prop comics are somehow frowned on in the comedy industry. I have no idea why. That's fascinating. It's just different industries have their own different random stylistic fashions or whatever the word for that is.
Yeah, I don't know. People like rag on Carrot Top, but most serious, legit comedians are like, no, he's really good.
Yeah, I think that's probably the comedy version of magicians frowning on each other for not doing like difficult sleight of hand material or some bullshit like that. Yeah, just something that has no relevance to whether your act is actually good or effective, but some weird rule people have made up for themselves that for no good reason.
There's a comparison there for sure. It's not that far off, but
yeah.
I don't know. I was talking about this with Armstrong, and just because once again, his friend that you were just talking about, cruise director, and also a magician friend of ours, he saw Armstrong's show and goes to him, I don't know why this is working, but it is, because John is like killing it on Ships, but he's doing all, you know, he's doing smaller stuff and stuff that, you know, packs very small, but and he's doing a lot of like projection stuff like you are. And I think it comes from the audience. It shows like Fool Us, you know, where people are seeing more sleight of hand. But I think people are just like craving legit skill in magic because they've seen the box tricks. They've seen the Masked Magician and they think they know how all that stuff works, even though usually they don't. But I think people are just have this newfound appreciation for close up magic. You just did his rubber band.
They also, oh, that's right. I forgot you're still on video. That's hilarious. I don't turned away. I forgot you could see me. I'm just like, dicking around practicing this thing. I think people are also craving actual interesting people to connect with,
sure. An
interesting personality, which, you know, that's something we're delivering, and John definitely does. He's an interesting, engaging, funny person who's engaging, like, you know, I once saw John on a panel discussion, and he was great. It was really watching and engageable. Zero magic. And that's the thing. People forget about it. And let's face it, most magicians are strange, awkward, kind of alien, unrelatable people.
Yeah.
And that can play. Like, that can be very engaging. I mean, it's that thing Max Maven always talked about, because he's, you know, not the easiest person to connect with as a performer, but the point is he's interesting. He talks about that. He says, I can't remember his exact words, but sort of, you don't need to be likable, but you need to be interesting. You need to be engaging. And that can be in a sort of a disconcertingly strange, creepy way, like a Zabrecki or a Dan Sperry as well. But the point is it's interesting, it's engaging. There's a personality there. There's some substance and some depth and some layers rather than just, look, I have a big box and some dance moves and a girl in a bikini. Bam! Showbiz. That just has nothing beyond that surface.
We dated once, but it was fine. But not anymore.
Exactly.
There's something to that for sure. And this comes back, this is kind of the last thing I want to talk about, was just collaboration. And going back to when I did Chicago Magic Lounge, I had a bunch of guys come up to me who haven't seen me perform in a while, but when I used to live in Chicago, I would perform with them, and I got to know them a little bit. And they were just very complimentary of how much I've grown as a performer. And I told them, like, that just is coming from being in L.A. and being around magicians and performers who are much better than me and learning to collaborate and learning to work with other people, because I think that's such a difficult thing. A lot of magicians who aren't lucky enough, you know, to be in a magic hub like we are, they kind of get complacent in the big fish in a small pond scenario of, I don't need to work on ideas with other magicians because either they'll just steal it or they feel like their idea is better. But that's been certainly the biggest blessing of coming to LA is just collaboration and getting to meet and befriend great, you know, other magicians and performers, because it makes you better, regardless of how you look at it.
A mutual openness to feedback.
Yeah,
that's one of the best things. Is, you know, sitting down and giving each other notes and picking apart the act and the routines and going, all right, how could this be better? What else could you be doing here? And working on it all together is the best thing.
And I'm not immune.
I've been missing that.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing of being away is you don't have that.
Oh man, I don't. It's frustrating.
And you come back and you're rusty in weird ways you didn't expect, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, well, that's what you want. And that's one of the things that originally made me fall in love with LA, and I've been missing recently is, you know, it's someone who you respect watching you go, all right, here's everything that's wrong with what you're doing. Let's pick it apart and let's fix it. That's the best thing.
And it never goes, it hurts your ego for sure, but it's necessary. Yeah.
But you and you either get over that very quickly so that it doesn't even hurt your ego anymore because it's just part of life and the process, or you never grow.
Yeah.
It frustrates me when people give credit for things that I don't think should be worthy of credit. It's like complimenting someone on not being a rapist. It's like, that shouldn't be something to compliment them on. Like, you know, wow, that's so good. I say, no, that's like a minimum requirement. At the same time, when people say, wow, that's really good how you're so open to feedback, that shouldn't be worthy of a compliment. Like, yeah. That should be, that's the minimum necessary thing to ever get better at anything and to not be shit. And it's frustrating that clearly at a societal level, that is not a universal value nearly to a high enough degree.
Yeah, and I'm
including in LA and at the castle.
Yeah, and I'm guilty of, and I've probably sent you several screenshots where you're like, please just stop, of just like unsolicited advice from people I don't know.
That's
or
right.
Non-professionals.
You do get bitchy about that.
It's one of my pet peeves, but that's only because it's unwarranted. It just comes out of nowhere. I'm like, who are you?
Yeah.
I'm not going on your YouTube video and giving you advice, but.
Yeah, but you know what? They're part of. I mean, it's depending on who they are, they're part of your target market. They might, and they every now and then, one of those will be a great idea.
And you
can't get those occasional nuggets of gold.
The reason
if you
I'm
gracefully yeah. take the other ones.
Yeah, the reason I'm the real reason I'm mad if we're going into therapy is because I know they're right, and I don't want to admit that they're right.
Yeah,
but
I always think back to literally to Zen: be the water, not the rock. Like
there you go.
Like the arrow just passed straight through your chest, leaving a ripple. No damage.
That's beautiful. Once again,
being of water.
Rocco Solano comes back. When you're green, you grow.
Yeah.
When you're ripe, you rot. Rocco will always be
that was
with
still,
us.
Oh, that was still one of our best episodes.
If you ever listen, listened to the Rocco Solano episode, go back.
Oh, it's great.
He starts doing visual magic on a podcast.
It's amazing. The whole Macau sessions was, I think, the great thing on quote unquote our podcast. You and me, Nick, our podcast.
Like I said, like I think
it's still hilarious
like,
how many people come up and say that.
It's just evolving into our podcast simply because we're supposed to do an interview with somebody coming up, but I don't know if that's still happening for the next episode.
Do we even know who? Some person.
I've had a few people contact me and were interested in wanting to be on, so which is always nice and helpful. But
I wonder if we should. It might be interesting because I know that you have low motivation to track that stuff down often because it's not what you're into. Maybe if we lean into the existential angle of it and say, by the way, this is going to get existential. This is for real talk.
Sure.
Did I tell you? I think I mentioned to you. Yeah, one of my good friends and someone I really respect back in Australia. Mentioned this is now the only magic podcast he listens to because it's the realest. It's the one that gets the most real.
We get
and
the
doesn't
honest.
Try and fluff it up and paint this look at our great lives picture. Our lives are great, but that's not all they are. There's lots of layers to it. There's wonderful things and there's terrible things, and you need to address them all. Otherwise, what are you doing?
Yeah, just hopefully humanizing magic for people. There's a lot of... Once again, when I started this podcast in 2012... I was like one of four, and now I saw somebody, a magician I won't name that we mutually respect, is like, hey, I'm thinking about starting a magic podcast. What do you guys think? Talking about these subjects and this. I'm like, oh, all the things we talk about on our podcast. But it's fine. That's what the internet's for. Do what you want. That's why I started this, is because
exactly.
I could. So that's great.
Yeah.
But I hope it helps people, and it always just comes back to being therapy for me of venting because it's... It's hard to, and I was talking about this with some old friends that I saw last week in Chicago, of she's a nurse, and even though she was in a relationship, she couldn't really bring that home. She could only really talk about nursing issues and like emotional stuff she was going through with other nurses because they only truly understood it. And it's the same with performing. You can talk to somebody who works in an office, and there's great, that's awesome. But their life experience is very different than our life experience of doing this full time. And there's no judgment in that sentence. That's just the truth.
Yeah, it's just you can't possibly know. We can't know what it's like to be a nurse and the shit that nurses have to deal
with. Totally, yeah, I can only imagine.
We can't relate to that. Yeah, my God.
Yeah, you think about on your hardest day, you think about the worst show you've ever had, then you go, the best day as a nurse has got to be, you know,
yeah,
just insane like compared to
watching.
That.
I don't know, watching incompetent doctors kill patients or something. I don't know. You know, it's got to be horrifying stuff.
According to Scrubs, you know, nurses do most of the work and get paid half as much, a third as much, or fourth. I don't know what.
And as we know, Scrubs is 100% accurate.
Hey, Scrubs, I'm going to fight you on this because Scrubs is labeled as the most accurate doctor show because they took real life scenarios.
I heard it was the most culturally accurate.
Culturally,
it was sort of the most accurate in terms of,
and every disease or every medical issue they had were all based on real issues, as opposed to House, which is like, here's this crazy thing where their brain's about to explode for no reason.
No, I'll fight you on that because House
was a great show.
Almost entirely real medical, just unbelievably rare medical problems.
But so like on a weekly basis.
Yeah, that was the unrealistic bit. It's like they're all happening to this one little cute town of people all the time. That was the unrealistic bit. Like, most of the conditions were realistic. The other thing that was unrealistic in House was just, like, the division of labor. The fact that the doctors would be doing the tests and things themselves, and just the way it actually worked was very unrealistic, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I was told by qualified medical professionals.
All doctors are like,
you know what? Next week's going to be fun. We're working the castle together. Yay!
Hey, if you're in L.A. and if you're a Magic Castle member, you know somebody who's a Magic Castle member. Come on in.
Come and see the stuff. What are you doing? You just doing stuff? Anything new?
Well, I was going to add in two new things, and our lovely good friend Jack Goldfinger
Jack's amazing.
He's an amazing man. So my buddy is doing the palace in April, and he wanted me to do it with him. And like a week before, I had just booked the parlor. And this is just gives you a little bit of an insight of what it's like to be the booking craziness at the castle. You know, I was going to do this week, and then Jack is like, "Well, you have to give up your week in January if you're doing that because they're too close." I'm like, it's like 4 months, 3.5 months difference, but okay. But it might change, and I kind of gave him two different set lists. I pitched him. I'd be doing two different shows, you know, be doing some talking stuff. And so now I'm kind of on hold, and I have no idea what my set list is going to be on Tuesday. Mm. And that's, you know, 3 days away, which
that's
is kind
standard.
Of a fun thing
that's
to
fine.
Do.
That's fine. Yeah, that's pretty common.
And you're working.
That's the other thing people never realize how non far in advance shows in Magic are usually planned.
Sure. Yeah, I like to have it removes a lot of stress for me to know exactly what I'm doing, but at the same time, I'm like, I'll figure it out on Monday.
Yeah, for us it's going to be interesting because I'm doing the Pella with Shoot, which is so the Pella in the castle.
Shoot Ogawa, who's amazing.
Is Shoot Ogawa the legend himself?
His fish trick makes me cry. Don't tell him I said that.
Spoiler alert.
I won't say. No, there's no spoiler
trick
that
you don't, well, yeah, luckily you don't know which ones.
Yeah, I just said the fish trick.
Exactly. The we're still working on that duo show that we kind of wrote a bit over a year ago and did in the Pella, so we're sort of trying to evolve that a bit. Don't really know what we're going to do with it, where it's going to go, but it's going to be fun finding out. It's that whole backstage, front stage, theatrical one.
Cool, that'll be fun. So I'll try to catch one.
That'll be interesting.
My shows are like literally
at
the same time.
It's funny though, that does mean the week's going to be a little more stressful because we're actually going to be working on something and we have to do some upfront work to do it. It's not like you can just rock up and do a solid set of good stuff as your baseline. We actually have to really be on top of it, which means it won't be super like a funsies relaxing party week, but it will still be good to.
No, that's what
that.
The.
I mean, it's always a joy to perform at the castle.
Yeah, and that's what the first 2 days. If you're lucky enough to have like a good set of days, that's what the first 2 days or 3 days should be of you just either trying out something new or working on something. Mm-hmm. So by that end of that week, you know, you have something new in your pocket or something new that you hopefully will work. You know.
Well, hopefully, right?
I mean, it probably will fail, and a lot of times you cut it and go, okay, you know, try something else.
Come back to doing good stuff so to keep the punters happy.
Well, what I do is I smush it in the middle. I try something new in the middle.
Yeah.
And if it fails, it fails. Okay, I know the thing right after works. So that's,
yeah,
I think that's
the
how
classic
you do
sandwich
it.
Technique.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's, But that being said, I had something, two new things I wanted to add in, and I don't think they're ready. And I don't want to fail that hard. So.
That's actually a good point. The working out how much failure you're happy with risking is another really good thing in terms of personal growth and development.
I think if it's in your body and you kind of have it worked out, then fine. But if it's not that, then no. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. My personal line for that is, as long as no one walks out of that room feeling like they wasted their time or their money, my conscience is clean and I'm willing to experiment and test things and risk things.
Yeah, like, I think people go to the castle expecting to spend money, but there is a weird expectation of when a lot of times they're waiting in line for an hour to see a 20-minute show, or in your guys' case, a 40-minute show. And there's a little bit more added pressure to that because, you know, people's time is valuable.
Yeah, damn right.
Time.
They have a karmic investment that deserves to be paid off.
It's true.
By lavishing you with their attention.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, there's this weird delay with FaceTime. It's great.
Yeah, the Wi-Fi looks like it's dropped out a bit. Next week at the castle, should we record a live episode from there or something?
Well, I was going to do that, but I'm
getting ahead for the next month.
I'm trying to adhere to, we're dropping an episode on the first of the month. That's why I was doing this. But we should. I did that once before with my old podcast partner, Dennis. We did an episode right up to where we had to do a show. Where they recorded for about 20 minutes and went literally walked on stage. So we could, if we feel up to it, we could do that. We may be too exhausted to do that because it's a very exhausting week.
Yeah,
but we'll see. Stay tuned.
I wonder if I'll check. I wonder if Shoot's up for doing an episode because that could be interesting from backstage.
Oh, I would love to.
Except our shows line up at the wrong times, don't they?
Yeah, or we could just get there at 7 and record for 20 minutes or something like that, and it could be like a little bonus episode for people, so stay tuned. Yeah. May happen.
See what happens. It might or might not happen.
It may or may not happen.
Stay tuned.
Probably won't.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Always good.
So what is it? twomagicians1mic@something.com. What are our things again?
Our social media is just, there's the Facebook, twomagicians1mic, the Gmail, if you have fan mail or hate mail, twomagicians1mic@gmail.com. And I'm at Nick Paul Magic. You're at Things by Simon.
At Things by Simon on whatever app you have open. I am at Things by Simon. Let us know if there are any topics you're interested in hearing about or hearing two grizzled existential curmudgeonly magicians' thoughts on. We would love to find out what people are actually enjoying or not enjoying and would like to hear more of or hear less of.
Yeah, and I want to shout out a thank you. We got a couple of donations if you're a fan of the podcast. Let's see here. I'm trying to pull up the name. We got money from a man. Oh, cripes. I'm pulling it up right here in my dog room. Let's see here. Cripes.
A highly effective
man. Highly effective. I'm such a jerk. Right, but thank you for donating money. See, I got the notification from PayPal, but their name isn't on there, so I'm trying to find. No, oh, here it is. Here it is. You got money from Haram. Thank you, Haram.
Thank you, Haram.
He sent it. You can if you're interested in donating to the podcast, it costs about $20 a month to keep this going, which comes out of my pocket. You can PayPal us twomagicians1mic@gmail.com. Yeah. So thanks, Haram.
$20. That's like two comedy club gigs.
you make a whole comedy club 10-minute set, you know, just to keep this going. It's expensive.
All right. Peace out.
All right. Bye-bye.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to Two Magicians, One Mic podcasts. Please rate us on iTunes. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Visit our website, www.twomagiciansonemic.com. Send fan mail or hate mail to twomagiciansonemic@gmail.com. Have a great week.